What drives Britain's fanatical support for Ukraine? Now, this is a question that has really baffled me, and even as the Trump administration seems to be moving in the other direction, our government pledges a 100-year pact with Ukraine. And the former defense secretary, Ben Wallace, penned a truly absurd article in The Telegraph a couple of days ago, which I'll read in full in a little bit, because it really needs to be heard to be believed. But it's still, I ask the question again, why is our government, out of all of the Western governments, more than the French, more than the Germans, more than the Americans, Britain is the number one cheerleader of Ukraine. Now, I asked this question on Twitter, and I said, look, even I, world-class researcher, can't find a decent answer as to why the British government is so psychotically pro-Ukraine. Search results are clouded by rubbish. Now, if you notice, I've circled there the 126 replies I received to that question on Twitter. And in my experience, when there are so many different answers to a question, but when you're not ratioed, as I was not here, that usually means that there's no clear answer, that people are actually divided on what the answer was. And if you go and read those answers I got, people were all over the shop. And they range from being smug, like, oh, you don't even know that, to, you know, equally baffled, to, you know, various people say, well, it's ideology, it's this, it's that. A lot of people pointed to the debt. But as I pulled up on that same day on Twitter, there is a large contingent liability, they call it. If Ukraine is unable to service its debt to the World Bank, the UK, for some reason, would take on its repayment obligations, potentially over the next 35 years, with payments peaking at around £375 million per year, which is equivalent of 3% of the UK's current aid budget in the early 2030s. Now, the thing is, yes, that is staggering. Yes, that is crazy. It's a terrible idea, probably Boris Johnson's fault, all the rest of it. But the bottom line to me is that those numbers, that £375 million a year, is not enough to break the bank. That is not enough to bankrupt the Bank of England. Okay, I mean, the UK can afford that. It's a mortgage for them. You know, it's nothing, basically. That is not, like, okay, Britain's economy that may not be the best it's ever been, but we can still afford £375 million a year over 35 years. It's nothing in the overall scheme of things. Yeah, 3% of the aid budget, not GDP, not the government budget, the aid budget. So it's basically peanuts. Okay, so that is not the reason. That is the reason that kind of a lot of people give, because, you know, people are aware that the Bank of England is on the hook for the Ukraine debt, but the debt is not actually big enough to bring the country to its knees. And that also does not explain why Britain was prepared to make that deal in the first place. Well, anyway, another interesting response was by Stormy Waters, a guy who's quite popular in America, who mentioned that, you know, JP Morgan pulled out of the LBMA in 2023. JP Morgan controls 90% of the institutional bullion market. They think there's going to be, you know, no gold left in the British reserves because JP Morgan have pulled them out. However, my friend Blackhorse, who's made a number of guest appearances on this channel in the past and guest videos, my Canadian correspondent, is also a finance bro. And I actually pointed out that the, you know, there's gold custody in the UK is stronger than ever since COVID. And another dude mentioned that JP Morgan's latest bar list report shows that nearly all of their gold is still in London. So I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I'm just saying that the Stormy Waters explanation has got this immediate response. And it still doesn't really explain why the UK is so all in on Ukraine. Like why are they so psychotically for this? Now, before I read this Ben Wallace article, I did talk about Halford Mackinder yesterday and the Heartland theory. And another possible reason is that the great game of the 19th century was mainly played out between the British Empire and the Russian. And British foreign policy, since Mackinder, arguably since the mid-19th century, has been all about keeping the Germans and the Russians separated, split up in some way, fighting each other rather than uniting. And they've been basically geostrategic rivals or enemies of the Russians all the way back to the great game over Afghanistan and Persian Gulf and so on in the 19th century. So they've been rivals for a very long time, the British and the Russians. And it could be what is known as a kind of a momentum. In fact, this is something that Mackinder talks about. He talks about social momentum. There could be such a thing as institutional momentum within the British foreign policy establishment, the Foreign Office, where they've been against the Russians for so long, not only in the 19th century, of course, for most of the 20th century, during the Cold War, where, Russia was the great enemy. So it could be that it's just so entrenched and momentum kind of takes on a life of its own. And there's basically nobody in the room to say no. There's nobody in the room to stop with all of this. So they're all they're in a kind of bubble, and there's no John Mearsheimer there, or there's no countervailing voice, as there may be around Trump or in Washington, where, there are other interests or whatnot. In Britain, maybe the thinking is all anti-Russian all the time. I'm not sure if that is a sufficient explanation, really. But, I mean, how else do you account for this almost psychotic level of support? I mean, you can't just say, it's moral. Britain's more moral than every other country. If you told the rest of the world, Britain, the old fox is driven by morality, they'd laugh in your face. Now, obviously, Britain is never driven by, more than its material self-interest. If you know anything about this country and its history. So, I mean, it's hard. It really is hard to explain. If anybody knows, by the way, watching this video, if anybody's got a better idea than these countervailing theories that I've presented here, let me know, because I don't find any one of them particularly convincing. Now, before I sign off, I'm going to read this piece by Ben Wallace. Before I do so, let me just remind you, do buy courses at the Academic Agency. Trivium is the bestseller there. There's Foundations of Shakespeare, which has also been selling extremely well since I released it. I'm going to play the ad for Foundations of Writing today, which is the first course in the Trivium. And after that, I'm going to read this article by Ben Wallace to show you just how insane our establishment is when it comes to this topic.
Buy Foundations of Writing on the Academic Agency. To write clearly will help you to think clearly. The ability to communicate ideas in lucid prose is foundational to success in many areas, and it is a basic requirement in every walk of life. You will learn the parts of speech and come to understand the core functions of the English language, sentence construction and syntax, punctuation, style, and common mistakes. Once you see how mistakes are made, you will not unsee them. You will know for the rest of your life. Foundations of Writing. Buy it now.
All right, so Ben Wallace, Ukraine's betrayal proves we have entered a second age of appeasement. The West has chosen dishonor in bowing to President Putin and will be rewarded with more war. This week, leaders and officials from across the world will gather in Munich for the annual security conference, the preeminent gathering for securocrats and politicians. It's a place for leaders to set out their positions and draw red lines, and has hosted both Russian President Vladimir Putin and a bevy of US vice presidents in the past. Munich's motto is peace through dialogue, but it has proven itself in recent years to also be a forceful bastion of European resistance against Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. What a shame, then, that this year's gathering seems to mirror the disastrous conference of 1938, where the continent stood blind in the face of Hitler's duplicity. The stench of appeasement is once again returning to Munich. Oh, my gosh, Ben. Hasn't he got his knickers in a twist? J.D. Vance will soon set out the foundations of a Ukraine peace deal that seems to have been crafted over the head of America's ostensible ally, President Zelensky. The Trump administration, presuming itself to be the biggest donor, actually Europe is, feels it can dictate the terms out of thin air, confident that nobody will stop it from fawning over Putin and his quote-unquote security demands. With the question of NATO accession now firmly off the table, there is no guarantee that Putin will not return to wrest yet more territory from Ukraine. Ukraine will have no reason to trust the West again, having already been betrayed by us once before. We promised to guarantee the Budapest Memorandum in 1990, where Ukraine's safety was supposed to be guaranteed in exchange for the surrender of their nuclear weapons. We abandoned that pledge in 2014 when Putin stole Crimea and Donetsk. The Russian leader is not one for keeping his promises. As the new US Defense Secretary once said to Russia, a ceasefire is just another opportunity to reload. Any concerns of this nature clearly disappeared once Hegseth got a taste for MAGA-backed power. But that doesn't make his former statement any less true. The fundamental misjudgment of Trump is his view that China is the only real threat to American supremacy. In truth, Russia poses a similar, if not greater, threat, having actually proven its willingness to engage in a hot war to secure its interests. America may soon feel the dictator breathing down its neck as he looks to Alaska and the Arctic territories, and the arena of trade is vulnerable too, with the Kremlin's disregard for international treaties directly threatening US commercial interests. After Chamberlain returned to Britain in 1938, having signed an agreement with Adolf Hitler, he proclaimed peace for our time. Winston Churchill then rebutted that you were given the choice between war and dishonour. You choose dishonour and you will have war. And the same fate awaits the West, whether in the Taiwan Strait, Iran, or elsewhere in Europe. If it fails to stand strong now, and like 87 years ago, it will have its roots in Munich. Hysterical Ben Wallace, bringing up World War II, the lens through which all events must be understood. And of course, Putin has become Putler. Now, I wonder if therein lies the real answer, that in Britain, especially, the ghost of Winston Churchill, the spectre of the narratives, the myth, the boomer truth regime, as I like to call it, looms ever stronger and larger in the heads of people like Ben Wallace, to such a totalizing extent that they are simply unwilling and unable to turn course now. I don't know what the real answer is. What I do know is that Britain does not have a military anywhere close to being able to stand toe-to-toe with the Russians without the Americans. The idea that Britain is going to lead Europe in a war against Russia or is going to continue backing Ukraine when the Americans have given up is just farcical. Come back to reality, Ben, Keir, Rory Stewart, and all of these other people. Like, why are they so delusional? Somebody needs to tell them it's not 1890 anymore. We don't have the British Empire anymore, thanks to Churchill, right? We don't have power to pull these plays, and yet they continue. I saw a Sun headline today talking about what would happen if the Russians nuked us. The very fact that this is being talked about is insane. We just don't have the power to project into this regional dispute between the Russians and what happens on their border. I mean, it may ultimately be driven by Mackinder, but we don't have the power that we did once upon a time to stop this from happening. And if the Americans had the power, they would have stopped it already, or they wouldn't be giving up. It's time to wake up. It really is. And I want realism. Unless there's something that all of these Ursula von der Leyen and Starmer and all these people know that I don't, and we all don't know, right, about the basic kind of military and economic strength of Europe, they need to give up. I just don't know why they're continuing down this suicidal course. It is crazy. Anyway, I'll be talking more about this later in the week, because there's the whole story about J.D. Vance going over to Europe as well. I'll probably talk about that tomorrow, and then maybe I'll talk about the Gaza situation on Thursday. All right, see you later, folks. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.